Before I start, I wanted to thank my colleague Nandini Pillai, who is sitting in the audience, who helps me in putting this presentation together. So I work for a private foundation, and what I will be sharing with you today is what we've learned in providing funding for HIV prevention efforts throughout Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, and also more recently throughout Southeast Asia. The four new countries that we are working in are Thailand, China, Indonesia, and there is a fourth one, and Malaysia. So our foundation in 1995 has decided that HIV prevention among drug users and generally drug policy issues should be a part of our foundation's agenda. And so we started to partner with Soros foundations, which are sitting in countries of the former Soviet Union, at developing a harm reduction program. So to this date, we supported more than 200 projects in 26 countries of Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. And those projects are mostly needle exchange programs, methadone, or generally substitution programs, and also outreach to drug users and other VCT. We are connecting drug users with ARV treatment more recently. So our presence throughout the former Soviet Union is pretty significant. Projects seek to reduce HIV and other adverse consequences of drug use through evidence-based approaches. So as you see here, needle exchange, opiate substitution, peer outreach, medical and social services, community advocacy, human rights protection, and policy reform. For those of you working with HIV, obviously we clearly understand that you can have the best sort of state-of-the-art set of services set up, but if local enforcement, for example, is not collaborating and it's standing outside of the on the corner, that those services can be very easily undermined. So this tension between public health and law enforcement is a very severe one, and one that very much undermines public health interventions in countries that we have been working with. So this is just to give you a sense of our region, where we are present, and one thing to keep in mind is that if we look at UNAIDS global reports over the last 3 or 4 years, we will learn there that HIV epidemic throughout that region is growing faster than in any other geographic region of the world. So I think we've learned over time that in terms of actual prevalence, obviously countries of Africa are those that are most affected, but if one looks at incidence and how dramatically fast HIV is spreading, it is in fact the former Soviet Union, and it is in fact some parts of Southeast Asia. So why is it happening? Just very briefly, we have massive migration, massive immigration, and political conflicts in our region. We have sort of rewiring of economic systems with collapse of all state role and industrial patterns. Economic desperation often leads to emergence of underground economies. Drug trafficking, sex work, smuggling sort of become a means for people to earn money. And so what happens is that HIV epidemics moves exactly in the same channels. If one looks at the Central Asia, for example, which borders Afghanistan, there really shouldn't be a surprise that so many young people, and generally so many people, are engaged in processes that are related to drug trafficking. So it's not only drug trafficking, it also is sort of working with raw opium, which will then go on the market in Western Europe, in Russia itself, in order to provide housing, school books for kids. Those economies are very much a part of Central Asian society. And what has happened a while back is that very often, particularly young people that were engaged in it, were then paid in heroin for the services that they provided. So they had a choice to sell off the heroin and make money on it, or to use it. This is one of our needle exchange programs. in the region. Okay, so Russia, out of all those countries in the region, Russia has the fastest growing epidemic in the world, estimated 1 million. Estimated 1 million with HIV, more than in North America. And 3/4 of those folks, as you see, are under the age of 30, and 70% of them are injecting drug users. Ukraine, estimated 400,000 cases. Again, 69% of them are injecting drug users. And Central Asia, cases are doubling every year. And again, 80% of them are injecting drug users. Let me stop here for a second and make a point about sort of generalized epidemic, because I think what we are now hearing, I mean, this is now an epidemic in our region that has reached some maturity. It's been sort of present or in brewing for a number of years. And I think what we are now hearing very often from public health officials in that region is that the epidemic is generalizing. And in some very sort of odd way, you hear a sigh of relief. Okay, the epidemic is generalizing. I mean, obviously, that sigh of relief is troubling, because if that were in case true, we're talking about quite a significant number of people that would be affected. But what's most troubling is that it once again shows their unwillingness to deal with epidemics that are driven, sorry about this, I put this for the purposes of timekeeping, not taking the calls. So basically it shows the unwillingness of public health officials to deal with IV injecting drug users driven epidemics. Because in some way, you know, the interpretation is, or the policy sort of question then is, okay, so we will just put billboards about condoms up instead of dealing with drug users, where they are, which causes a lot of discomfort and makes things difficult. So I think that the data there is not necessarily sound enough to back this claim up that the epidemic is generalizing. I think what is happening, and this is what we are actually seeing through the needle exchange programs that we are working with, is that drug users are passing on the virus to their sexual partners. And that really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. As you look at those numbers, 3/4 of those drug users are less than 30. Many of them are male. They, of course, are sexually active. I think there are many sort of urban myths about, you know, once you do drugs, you don't need sex, which we do not at all see as the reality of the folks that we work with. And as sort of proud as I am of the work of needle exchange programs, I think one area where we could have been stronger, or where generally harm reduction community could be stronger, is around sexuality of drug users. So I think if anyone sort of has moral difficulties or policy difficulties with providing needles and syringes to drug users, provide condoms to drug users, provide a lot of sexual education to drug users, because this is where I think Russia and Ukraine are at the moment. That HIV, we've been managing to sort of put preventive interventions in place to prevent HIV from one user to the other through injection, but I think we have not done as well when it comes to preventing HIV from drug users to their sexual partners. So I think we're somewhere in that very gray area, and even though we are in the gray area, the way to respond to it is still to scale up services for drug users. It is about making sure that they have access to sexual health interventions. It is about making sure that they have access to condoms. So even though as you sort of read the reports about this generalized epidemic, and if you ever work in our region, do keep in mind that it is it's still very much the link from IDU to the sexual partner of the IDU. So let me move on, if I can get the machine to switch. Okay, so good news. services for drug users. Now, I think the best news of all is that drug users want services, and it is undisputable. I've had experience in working in gay communities. I've had experience in working in heterosexual communities with and now with drug users. And what truly strikes me is that if you give a condom to a 17-year-old, they're not particularly thrilled about it. And it's clear that they will or maybe will not use it. When you give a needle and syringe to a drug user, they are thrilled, okay? There is absolutely no hesitation. Of course they will use it. So in terms of actual ease and expectations, in terms of how effective interventions are, work with drug users is amazingly easy because they want the service. And it's undisputable, they do want the service. So evidence-based intervention to stem HIV and other harms against HIV in drug-using communities do exist, and they're indeed wanted and effective. Syringe exchange programs and methadone maintenance programs have been proven easy to implement, highly effective, have been in trials from Australia to Thailand to Belarus. So there is really very little doubt on or uncertainty about effectiveness of those programs. So I think that this is really good news. And if we could only overcome the bad news, which is that evidence of effectiveness has so far proved a poor match for ideology. Countries with injecting-driven epidemics continue to emphasize criminal enforcement and demand for abstinence over the best practices of public health. So this tension between what we know works and then what we know and what we do know works under the umbrella of public health, and then what we know does not work, and that very often falls under the umbrella of law enforcement, is really very dramatic. And it's dramatic here in the United States, and it is dramatic throughout the world. I think parts of Western Europe are the only places, and Australia, and actually Canada, are sort of the places where that tension has been resolved in some acceptable way. These are our drug users that have been locked up outside of a needle exchange program. So one can imagine that that's not an enabling environment for HIV prevention. And even though public health officials are investing in needle exchange programs or outreach programs, if this is what happens to our clients, clearly we will not impact HIV prevention in that region or anywhere else. And one of the big obstacles for us internationally is in fact what happens in the United States. It's no surprise that US exerts a lot of pressure to sort of forward its own interests and its own policies. And as many of you know, I'm sure U.S. Federal funding cannot be spent on needle exchange. So in my view, you know, my thinking about it is that if the U.S. chooses to have that anti-public health policy, you know, that's sort of the business of the United States. The problem is that that policy is then being pushed on countries throughout the world. And this is where we are starting to have a very significant problem. How is it being pushed? Well, you know, US spends money on HIV prevention. You will hear about PEPFAR funding here. No needle exchange in that PEPFAR funding. So in Russia, where USAID spends money on on HIV prevention, even though 70% of those infected are drug users, there's little that this funding can do to respond to the real HIV epidemic in Russia. There is an international forum which is called UNODC, United Nations Drug Control Program, part of the UN, where every year US makes it very, very clear that it's anti-harm reduction, that it's definitely anti-needle exchange, It has softened its stance on substitution treatment, but it also is not wildly for substitution treatment, which is sort of interesting because there isn't that much controversy over buprenorphine and methadone in the state itself. But this sort of clear abstinence-only obsession as a way to deal with drug use seeps through from United States to other countries in the world, and it's extremely troubling. It's extremely troubling where we have already significant HIV epidemics. When it comes to our region, just very briefly, let me maybe skip that and say the following. Okay, so here are the troubles that we're having. That Russia, Kazakhstan, and Tajikistan are basically refusing to allow for substitution treatment. So they are using very very sort of outdated drug treatment protocols. They have huge amount of drug users who basically sort of go through revolving doors of very ineffective drug treatment whenever they do feel that they need assistance. Russia is really a problem, and Russia is a problem because this is sort of the country of the region. So if Russia says no, many of the sort of students of St. Petersburg University and Moscow University and many narcologists and other medical students that have professors that they're still communicating with in Russia itself, they sort of look up to Russia on how things go. So Russia is being extremely sort of unmovable on the issue of substitution, and obviously that's not helpful generally in the region. Okay, so this is just very quickly how we're trying to struggle with this as I'm running out of time. Rather forcefully, I think, advocate for clean needle substitution treatment. We try to make sure that the big policy bodies, such as UNAIDS, WHO, engage in those discussions, and that we have documentation that helps us advocate for those discussions at country level. We also do try to engage law enforcement in allowing programs to exist. Media campaigns about evidence-based interventions are very much needed in our region and are just starting. And I think our goal for next couple of years is basically how to disentangle public health from law enforcement and how to stop forced registration of drug users, sharing information with police, and then respond to discrimination through litigation and regulatory reform. So our needle exchange programs increasingly have a lawyer on staff who will assist outreach workers in documenting abuses, in reporting those abuses to the appropriate bodies at the national level. And it's interesting because many of those bodies, when you have a conversation with them, really think that it's a joke, you know, to say that a police officer is sort of harassing a needle exchange client. For them, it's sort of, you know, who will ever listen to you? I mean, the power there is so incredibly uneven that they rarely treat it seriously. I think what happens once an institution backs them up, such as UN institution or a foundation, and those abuse, or Human Rights Watch, and those abuses are reported on paper, and that is when some serious discourse can happen and where they actually look at the issue as a real issue. So I think the theme for us for a number of years will be indeed how to change overtly punitive, ineffective incarceration, and how to scale up prevention, and how to have all of them let us scale up prevention. Okay, so thank you very much. Sorry the end was rushed, but basically the point is public health clearly has a solution and it needs to engage and sort of push back when it comes to law enforcement agencies, because they're undermining a lot of good stuff that I think we can do. Thanks.